ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Track Limits podcast team. We've got four of us here in the booth together. A lot has happened during COVID-19, but for starters, F1 is back. Exciting times. We've got a calendar which has been released. Shortened calendar, but a calendar nonetheless. And then some interesting talks about the paddock, drivers and directors related. So, where do we start, Phil?
I'm just very, very excited that F1's back. I've never been so... It's like a drought. You know, if I could choose between water or Formula One, I think I would choose Formula One.
Formula One, yes, indeed.
Yeah, I felt really, really... But I've read 7 books on Formula One. I've never even picked up a book in the last 4 years, and it's driven me to read 7 books about Formula One. So
I didn't realise there were 7 books about Formula One.
There's more. I've got another one to read. One day I'll tell you all about them. Anyway, I'm just really excited that Formula One's back. Starting on the 3rd of July, we'll be able to listen to Martin Brundle's dulcet tones, taking us through the Austrian Grand Prix.
Is that going to be a doubleheader, though?
It is a doubleheader. It's the first two races are going to be... actually, it's going to be a tripleheader. So there's going to be 3 continuous weekends of Formula One racing. The first two are at Austria, at the... it's the Red Bull Ring now, isn't
Red
it?
Bull
yeah,
Ring.
Red Bull Ring. Nearly called it the Osterite Ring. Slap my wrist. yes, the first one is going to be called the Austrian Grand Prix, and the second one is going to be called the Styrian Grand Prix.
Styrian?
Yes, because you're not allowed to call the Grand Prix Austrian Grand Prix again, because then there'd be 2 Austrian Grand Prix of 2020, and it wouldn't work.
So what does Styrian mean?
It's like the area.
The mountainous region.
Austria,
oh, okay. Like,
the Styrian mountains.
Like a province kind of thing, yeah.
Hmm.
But how fitting of that, though, because Red Bull has not had a good opening round for in many a moons.
Well, yeah.
And it lends itself perfectly to Max Verstappen and Red Bull.
It does. They've been very strong there the last few years. I'll just take you through the calendar. I think there's 8 races. So starting off with 2 in Austria, followed by Hungary. Then we've got 2 races at Silverstone. Then I believe it's the Spanish Grand Prix, and then Belgium, and then Italy. So I think that calendar, and there will be more races obviously released, but that calendar could give, I think, a really good balance to the championship. Because if you look back at the last 2 years, Red Bull have been strong at Austria. There's going to be 2 rounds there. Mercedes are always strong at Silverstone. And then last year, Ferrari took victories at Spa and Monza. So I think it could be really quite an interesting start to the championship.
Yeah, will be very, very tight. Also, before you go any further, how tightly packed is that calendar as well? Because that's what, 8 rounds in the course of what, maybe 4 months?
I don't have that information to hand right now. you caught me off guard.
It could be very, very closely packed, though. So
they are, you know, more closely packed than usual.
Yeah,
definitely.
Didn't you say there's a triple header?
There's a triple header at the start, and then I think there's a week's break.
When was the last time that was done? I can't remember the recent seasons in terms of how frequent they are, but I don't ever remember there being.
I think
three
they've
in a row.
Had it maybe once in the last 5 years. It was getting a bit much, though. But the idea, obviously, of having double headers at Silverstone and at Austria is because of
they don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, they don't have to go into a different country with what's going on at the minute with coronavirus. And obviously, Great Britain, Silverstone, the government have decided that F1 are exempt from the 2-week COVID-19 quarantine. You know, some of the things that the government have done are questionable recently, but that is a great bit
thoughtful of them.
Great bit of great bit of governance and policy setting there. I'm really pleased about that. Yeah, I'm just really excited.
But there's no fans though, are there?
No. And I mean, I'm interested to see what that's going to be like actually to watch on telly. I wonder how noticeable it will be.
Because I mean, if you take the example of what the Premier League and well, not the Premier League, the Bundesliga are doing, they put ambient fan noise in. So if a team scores a goal in football, There's a recorded crowd noise. Are you going to do that for F1? Is that possible?
I think you've got to think about whether it has an effect on the drivers, because really, and I've heard some drivers say that they kind of don't tend to notice the crowd. So
Or you could do what South Korea have done in their baseball games and fill the grandstands with cuddly toys or sex dolls. Did you see they've done that?
I hadn't, no. That's an idea.
No, I wonder, hadn't seen that.
Can imagine Ross Brawn popping down the local sex shop to buy some sex
dolls. Oh, that would be spectacular.
Anyway, no, I think that'd be great. Sex dolls it is. That gets my vote.
Oh, my God.
Moving swiftly on.
Moving swiftly
yeah,
along.
Yeah, I think we should put that one behind us, really. So, Formula One have been looking to change up the format a little bit with these double headers at the same track. Because the reason being, I guess, they don't want a situation where, let's say, Mercedes dominate Austria the first weekend. They don't want to see that repeated. So they've looked at introducing, and there was a vote held of introducing reverse grid races. I would be a massive advocate for that, and it wouldn't be that the reverse grid race would be on the Sunday. It would take place instead of qualifying, so the results from round one, which would be held normally, would then be flipped. You'd have a reverse grid sprint race on the Saturday, and then the end of that race would determine the grid for Sunday's Grand Prix. So I just think it would be something a little bit different, which could really make it a little bit more exciting and give us a little bit of a shake up the grid on the Sunday. Nine teams said yes, one team said no. Any guesses?
Mercedes?
Yes.
There's no surprise there.
No, there's not.
No, not at
the blessed man himself.
Toto said no, and I can completely understand why he said no. You know, you're going to have those midfield teams that are going to think, well, this is our opportunity to start in a really good position in tomorrow's Grand Prix. So they're going to be up for a little bit more risk, you know, some more robust defending, and Hamilton and the, you know, people that usually run up the front are going to have to make their way through from the back.
You see, it's a funny thing you mentioned that. We were talking, or Chris and I were talking to someone yesterday about this same very thing with Toto Wolff and Mercedes. And yeah, Formula One in recent times has become so much of a business. It's almost not a sport anymore. And I think, yes, as much as me personally, I can understand Toto's beef about not running the reverse grid. But since it's never been done, and considering how things have been in Formula One for the past couple of years with the Mercedes dominance, I think you owe it to the fans to try it, even if it's once. I mean, they tried that horrible style qualifying system a couple of years ago, and then they reverted back to what it's always been. But I think they should at least try it.
I suppose if you're in one of the teams, though, and we can only see it from a fan's opinion, but if you're in one of the teams, you're going to want everything to run in your favour. And I just don't think this suits Mercedes. You know, we've seen that the Mercedes car is not always the best at following. It struggles sometimes with overheating when it's following. It needs to be a car that is out in the front, which it's fantastic at. And if it has to be, you know, taken past 20 cars in a short sprint race, they've definitely got the right man to do it in Lewis Hamilton. But I would just worry that he'd be taken out, or he'd be, you know, crashed off the road, or something would go wrong, and that would be could potentially be a big reason that he, you know, could even miss out on his seventh championship. So I completely agree. Well, I don't agree. I want it. I want reverse grid racing. I want carnage. But I completely understand where Toto Wolff is coming from.
Yeah, I have to say, I agree. I think the reasoning behind Toto's rejection is totally rational. And I think that there are a number of ways that you can look at it. So there's not one type of fan, is there? You know, we have us as fans who are, you know, deeply involved in, you know, following the sport and understand, you know, some of the intricacies of, you know, why one team is slower in this corner or in that sort of, you know, particular area, engines and whatnot. So for us fans, you know, it might be an easier thing to understand in terms of, okay, this is the reverse grid race, and at the end of it, the results will be flipped, and, you know, this person will start on pole and this and that. But if you look at it from a fan that's just turning up, and these are the fans that they're targeting, I feel, If you have to show someone a race and you go, okay, this is the first race. This isn't the actual race. This is a qualifying race. This is the race that they're going to go through to start the next race, which is tomorrow. You can see how confusing that is for someone that's like, so they just go around in circles and this isn't even the real race. Why are we watching this? Can you see there's a potential risk there that they're just overcomplicating matters by having reverse grids?
You could counter that as, and you know, for us as fans, the ones that are heavily invested in the sport, I love watching qualifying. I think qualifying is fantastic. However, a lot of people I speak to are like, well, why do you want to watch the qualifying? They're not even next to each other. They're just driving around in circles fast.
They don't understand it.
For obviously qualifying is the fast, it's driving as fast as possible, which is literally the goal of motorsport, to drive as fast as you possibly can. So that is being replaced with something that, you know, could see, let's say, George in the Williams. I've actually momentarily forgotten his bloody surname, haven't I?
George Russell.
That's the geezer. George Russell in the Williams, punting Max Verstappen off at turn one or turn five or wherever, midway through this qualifying race, and they'd be causing outrage and carnage. I just think it'd be great.
It would be a great spectacle for the fans. I don't think there's any denying that. It wouldn't just be, well, the fastest is already in the lead from qualifying. It would cause drivers to actually think about overtakes and perhaps bring it back a bit more to lower levels of racing, where all the cars are considered the same. They actually have to battle each other and try and overtake without having a better car.
Grassroots, yeah.
It might bring it closer to that sort of standard, which I think I would love to see. Overtakes being done all across the field, because they have to be done. You can't wait for the pit stop.
Yeah, and you know, the risk of going for the overtake is it has to be done, otherwise you lose out on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think it would suit Max Verstappen down to the ground as well, actually.
Also, from a team perspective, in terms of setup, it means then that there's not necessarily reliant on data, but it means a team has to have way more than one setup per driver, per day, per event. So, you know, there's so much more going on in a car, and that could mean more data for teams like Williams, who are already on the back burner trying to make their way through. So there's so much potential in this, but as well as there's so much risk, as Josh pointed out. It's a six of one, half dozen the other. It can go either way.
It's an argument of, is it improving or complicating the show? And that's one thing that is hard to answer. I wish it had happened now. I think it's probably one of the only opportunities that they'll get to try it. The fact that Mercedes said no has put the final nail in the coffin for the idea, I think. And it renders
it mute, though, because it's only one team against the other, eight or nine? So
yeah, it's sort of, yeah. It has to be everyone agrees to that sort of rule change.
Even Ferrari said yes.
Yes, because they're not going to get on pole. They know that.
Whinge bags Ferrari said yes. And I love Ferrari, they are whinge bags.
They know they can't get pole. That's the thing. So they're quite happy to.
Yeah, no, I suppose so. And Seb's got nothing to lose. He might just shunt everyone off everywhere. Anyway.
On the nose with that one, Phil.
Oh, yeah. King of sweeping statements.
What else have we got?
Right. Well, I did have... I was really pleased with the segue that I wrote down, and I've just completely fluffed it. So I'll just say Link, and then we'll pretend like it was a really good segue. So Link, Toto Wolff.
What?
Who?
Right, I'm going to go ahead and say that I genuinely no idea what's going on with Toto Wolff. I've tried to read about it. I've not got the brain ability to be able to keep up with what Toto Wolff's doing. I think he's the actual cleverest man in the world. But I'll let you have a go, Josh. Try and explain what's going on.
He's a mysterious man, that is for sure. So there's rumours at the moment that Toto is going to leave Mercedes, to put it bluntly. His contract ends at the end of this year, and he has recently invested in a number of other rival F1 teams, which has raised a number of questions. As to what he's going to do in the future. Is he going to look to a new challenge, or is he going to stick around at Mercedes and is just looking for personal personal improvement or benefit.
So who's he invested in?
So he has invested in two teams. One is Williams F1 team. He's taken back as a security a 5% stake. He previously had, I think, around 30% before he moved to Mercedes. And he also has invested in Aston Martin as a car company, as opposed to the Racing Point team. But obviously there are connections there coming next year. So it's really a question of, and of course he also has the shares with Mercedes F1 team. So he's definitely putting himself in a number of seats here. And it's going to only run and run and run, I think, this one. He's keeping his cards very close to his chest. And it's great for us. It means that we've got a lot to hypothesize and you know, reckon where he's going to most likely land. It's definitely something that isn't clear at this point.
I mean, his contract is up at the end of the 2020 season, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we could see him potentially walking away, although I doubt that very much. Carrying on with Mercedes, I think that's probably most likely.
I think he's passionate enough to not walk away for sure, but with so much on potential on the table, with potential, you know, with other moves. I mean, he's not only a businessman. He knows the technical side as well, and that's what you need. You need that balance between the two at the helm of an F1 team, something that some of the other teams don't have. So wherever he's going to bring that with him.
The one thing about Toto for me is that he is, I'd say his main career has been investments. He made his money as an investor enough so that he could invest in a Formula One team. And one of those characteristics of an investor is they know the right time to leave or the right time to pull out or to invest in. And he will know exactly when is the right time to leave Mercedes or even to continue or start a new challenge somewhere else. So it's hard for us to read, but he will definitely, I think whichever decision he makes, it will definitely be the right one at the right time.
Very switched on chap, as I said, far cleverer than I.
So is it going to get to the point where he just starts investing in Ferrari and now he's got his hands all over F1? Is he going to be the new Bernie?
Are you allowed to invest in Ferrari? I feel like that's, you know, strictly off limits.
Well, Ferrari's an extreme, but I mean, the point stands, is he going to just all of a sudden have his fingers absolutely everywhere and just slightly pulling the strings?
I don't think red's a very good colour for him.
I can see him in red.
I've never seen him wear red. It's a very good point.
He's too tall to be a Bernie. Bernie was very short.
He's too German as well.
Oh, he's Austrian.
Is he Austrian? That's even worse.
Yes.
Well, this is another thing. He is being touted as a potential replacement for Chase Carey, who is CEO of Formula One.
Who is awful at public speaking.
Yeah.
But that, I would welcome that move, you know. Toto Wolff being head of Formula One, I would happily welcome that.
But Ferrari are going to oppose it. That's the thing, because they think he's too close to Mercedes to run Formula One. He would favour Mercedes.
But Ross Brawn runs.
Yeah, Ross Brawn.
Formula One, and he ran Mercedes.
Well, that's just Ferrari's politics right now. It's really, I'd say him staying in F1 in that regard is interesting. But again, how can he be a shareholder in a number of teams at the same time without having questions raised about that? So I don't think that's near future, in all honesty.
Well, you said he has shares in Williams, right?
Yes.
And don't they use Mercedes engine?
They do.
So
dun dun dun.
I mean, it's not like they're unrelated.
Well, Racing Point have Mercedes engines as well, so he's got links to all the Mercedes teams apart from McLaren, which will be for next year. So yeah, maybe it's just a case of he sees the future, you know, future of Formula One being those teams rather than Mercedes. I don't know. It's leading to a number of questions, as you can see.
Conspiracy theory. He's going to mastermind the exit of Mercedes from Formula One and it just be an engine manufacturer. And then he's got enough of a foot in the door at those teams to make sure that they carry on with the superior Mercedes Grand Prix engine.
So they disperse all the Mercedes know-how and mechanics into the Racing Points, the Williamses, and whoever else, McLaren's
he's got
world.
All his money.
Yes. That's not a bad theory, that.
How I'm not sure how the rules are written as a as an engine supplier. If you are, well, obviously Honda are an engine supplier and they're not on the grid as a manufacturer or a constructor, but I'm not sure how the rules apply if you are, you know, from a business point of view, if you've got shares in a in an engine company that supplies across the grid, but then you function based on one of them and not the others, or I don't know, that could just potentially be bad blood. I don't know what the rules are. I don't know enough about it, but that could, you know, I can easily see that, you know, being frowned upon by others.
It's just a fan theory of mine that I made up on the spot.
Has anyone got any more? I think Toto's going to leave F1. That's my theory. Like, completely. I think he's going to leave.
Or do a Nico Rosberg, start a YouTube channel.
Well,
thing is,
become a meme.
I have a feeling he has. he's buying podcast equipment right now as we speak. We know it.
We can have him on Track Limits podcast.
He could be another member of the team. Yeah, absolutely. If he's willing, then, you know, and he's got a good internet connection in Switzerland. Why not?
Better than mine.
Everyone's got a better internet connection than you.
People in space
have a better internet connection than you do. Right, should we... What about Williams? Should we talk about Williams?
Okay, let's...
Williams have... last season, they managed to lose $13 million. Is it dollars or pounds? It should be pounds.
They operate in dollars because they are red. I think they are on the stock market.
I see. Well, they've lost $13 million. I can see why. That's all I'll say on the matter.
Yeah, it's no secret.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paddy.
The thing with F1, all the basically the whole team is on show every race day, isn't it? So you can see why they've lost money, because they're not doing very well.
Yeah, and I mean, they didn't start the season well at all, did they? Not showing up. I know we've mentioned that many a time, but we'll keep going back to it.
Yeah.
They've had, obviously, that whole year to try and invest some sponsorship.
Attain.
Yes, get some sponsorship. and they start off by not showing up at testing. They're not going to get any like that, are they? A question I've got written down here. It's quite harsh, actually. Does Claire Williams need to admit defeat and let somebody else front up the Williams team? And it's for sale, and she said that she wants to continue in her role in the future. You know, it's a family business and whatnot. But I just think she's not really up to the job. And I know some of you are going to say, well, I know what you're going to say, Josh, but let's hear it.
Yes, I think the thing that you just said then, when she says it's a family business, does ring some alarm bells, to be honest. I don't think F1 really is it's not the environment to say it's a family business. It's certainly her way of justifying why she's in that role, potentially. I don't know. But from my perspective, she's kind of taken on Williams at the worst time. And I feel like she's been quite quickly being made the scapegoat for a lot of their failures. When you think about it, Toto Wolff isn't an engineer himself, but they've had great success. It doesn't mean that, you know, he has those particular skills that has led to a car being ultra fast on track. He's just had the position of being in the right place at the right time with the right number of people in the team, and he's been a great motivator as well. I think Claire is in a similar position, except that the people that are around her, the technical team, have let her down, in all honesty. And she's been the one that's had to try and improve their situation in very difficult circumstances.
I'm going to come back and counter that. I'm just looking at the body language of Toto Wolff compared with Claire Williams. All I've seen for the last several years is that Claire Williams just gives off some kind of negative energy. She doesn't fire up the troops. She doesn't give me confidence that Williams car is going to be moving in the right direction. And I really don't want to say that, because I love Williams. Their history is fantastic. And but she just doesn't seem like she's the right person for the job. Whereas Toto Wolff, I think, regardless of the fact that he's at Mercedes, I think if you put him in that role at Williams, I would just feel...
He'd be more effective.
I feel he'd be more effective just by his body language. He, like you said, he's a motivator. And I think I would have more confidence in the Williams to move up the grid if he was there because of the way he holds himself and the way he shows outwardly.
Yeah, I don't think Claire Williams is as fierce as she needs to be being in that kind of role, particularly in this sport. You know, some obviously, you know, they're the Gunther Steiners of the world. That kind of style is effective in its own way, albeit in a very small way, but you need to have a certain style, but you need to be adaptable as well. And she just comes across as being a bit too nice in a leadership role. And, you know, being a leader, you've got to be stronger with your team, because at the end of the day, they're going to look to you to make the decisions. And if you can't make the decisions, then there's no team, pretty much.
So to pick up slightly on that then, Paddy Lowe came into Williams. He obviously did a you don't like him, Phil, do you?
No, I didn't mind the man, but I mean, the car. I mean, he was responsible for that car.
This is the point. Previously, he was with, who was it?
Mercedes.
And, you know, he was building winning cars. Comes to Williams, all of a sudden, he's not, you know, he's built a crap car, let's be honest. And is that therefore down to Paddy Lowe all by himself because for whatever reason he's changed or whatever? Or was it Claire Williams and the team let him down in not giving him the right stuff to build the car?
I've got my own opinion about that, to be honest.
Because I remember I was watching with you, Dom. I watched the Drive to Survive episode with Paddy Lowe in it.
He was just oblivious to the fact that, you know, he is at the helm of the technical side, and he has to make decisions. He has to be the glue to make it all stick. And he was just oblivious to the fact. And bear in mind that also the glory days of Williams in the early 90s, back with the active suspension. That was him. So, you know, I can't imagine that the company ethos of the Williamses has changed so much over, you know, almost 30 years for him to come back 30 years later and be like, well, this is different. Of course it's different, but it's still the same company approach, the same company ethos. And you've just come from Mercedes. You've had an incredible season. You've come to Williams to try and prove a point, and you've not proven it. You only have yourself to blame. And so for that, I lost a lot of respect for Paddy Lowe.
So is it that you can't teach an old dog new tricks?
Something like that, yes. But that's my opinion, though, so don't shoot me down for it.
No, not at all. It's a good opinion. So we're putting that on Paddy. So how much of therefore is there to say that it's not Claire's fault?
You've got people in charge, haven't you? You've got like you say about Toto Wolff. He's nothing to do with actually the manufacture and the design of that car. You give him a screwdriver, he'd probably use it as a hammer. I mean, that might be doing the man a disservice.
The man you said is probably the cleverest man on the on the planet.
You could be clever though, and not know how to use a screwdriver.
Debate,
but yeah, you know, you could, but you know, he doesn't do the car. He gets the right people in the right roles to do the car, and that's Claire Williams's role at Williams, and she's got the wrong person to do the car. So it's Paddy Lowe's fault for being crap at building a car. But equally, Claire Williams employed him. So, I don't know, you know. And when did she take over at Williams?
I think it was 2013/14.
So, that 2014 Williams was the second fastest car on the grid that year. Or third.
Yes.
And they've just gone down and down and
got
down
worse and, worse
and
every
down.
Season.
I just don't think that she's got a leg to stand on.
But the thing is, as much as you say that, despite them not making pre-season testing last year, when the car went, she was still there with the team. Where was Paddy Lowe?
At the bar, probably.
Drinking his sorrows away because he'd been fired.
I rest my case. I can't remember how. We will need to watch the episode of Drive to Survive again, but she was there. She was picking up bits in her van, and you know, she was still trying to make, you know, still being the leader. You know, bringing parts in a van and stuff like that. And where was Paddy Lowe? Not there at all. I mean, the entire thing was in shambles, but you know, someone has to take the blame for it. And I think for that 2019 car being as bad as it was, I have to say that, you know, Paddy Lowe being a technical director at the time, it was his responsibility and he muffed it.
So moving forwards then,
I hope this hasn't come
just turned into a Slate Williams session.
Well, the main news was, going back to our original point, was the fact that Williams are now for sale.
We got lost, didn't we?
Williams are for sale now. This is the decision that Claire Williams has taken, along with the board.
What I'd like to know is how much it's for sale for.
50p.
Like one of Martin Brundle's tyres.
Per share, I should say. I should point that out.
It's 50p a share?
It's 55p per share, yes.
Are you actually serious?
No, I'm being serious. I think they went on sale. They originally were on sale for about £1.70, so you'd have lost money.
Can I buy one?
You could buy one share. It would do absolutely nothing, but yeah, you could.
I just to say I've got a share of Williams. I'm going to do that.
You are a shareholder at Williams. Yes, you can do that.
Track limits could sponsor Williams. Imagine that.
Yes.
Yeah, we could.
We could sponsor a Bolt.
Collectively, we'd have what, £2.20? I reckon that could get them a front wing. Not a Paddy Lowe's front wing.
Paddy Lowe's front wing, yeah. It would be good at shoveling snow, but
shots
nothing much
fired.
Else.
I think we have lost the plot, Jid.
One day, you know, when we try and be credible, people will listen back to this podcast and think, what?
You're fired.
But that Williams livery this year, though, the white with a little bit of red and a little bit of blue, a track limits logo on the side would look very lovely.
It would look good, but Rocket's gone. They've left. They've jumped ship. They've terminated their sponsorship.
Are there rumours of Rich Energy doing something?
Rich Energy took the piss out of them.
I think that was a Mickey take.
I don't see Rich Energy going anywhere near motorsport again.
Yeah.
But that's a different conversation.
Yeah. So Rocket and Williams have terminated the sponsorship. So that red on the car, Dom, that you liked, gone. Also, the big Rocket word on the side, that's gone. So I don't know what actually they're going to have on the car come Austria.
We can fill it with Track Limits podcast.
Yeah, we could. We'll give them our £2.20 and see if they'll consider it.
We'll pay for the sticker.
Yeah. We'll pay for the sticker.
I know they may paint it on and it may cost £100,000 and a millimetre or whatever it is to paint the car, but we'll put a sticker on it, it'll be fine.
Right, so going back to Williams being for sale then, are there potential buyers lined up?
Yes, there are a number of people that are interested. One is Nicholas Latifi's dad, who owns Safina and Lavazza. This could be a Fathers' Championship as well as a Drivers' and Constructors' Championship, in all honesty.
What, like the Fathers' Egg and Spoon race?
Exactly.
that's gonna get spicy as well.
I don't know whether he owns shares in Williams already. I think he might do. But
he pays them a lot of money, I can tell you that, because his son's in the car.
Yes, so he could well do a Lawrence Stroll and buy Williams as a consortium with a number of other investors. There's also Nikita Mazepin's dad. Who is an F2 driver currently. And he has got links to, I believe it's McLaren at the moment.
Wasn't he a test driver for Mercedes before?
And Renault at some point, wasn't he?
All over. Anyone that will take his money.
He has moved around.
So yeah, I think it might well be that Latifi actually has shares in McLaren, actually. And he might take those shares out and then invest those into Williams. So there's potential credible buyers out there already. to take over Williams. And it would be interesting to see whether they take on the Williams name, because I feel that that is the, you know, the rights are with the Williams family. Are they going to give that up to the potential buyer? Because that has certain value to it as well.
I do think the Williams name has to stay, really. It's such a massive part of the history and the heritage of Formula One. I do think it deserves to stay on that car.
Do you think in that same way then that they should also get the extra money that they get for being a long-term entrant? Or would you say that they're a new entrant?
So their first car was 77. Compared that to Ferrari, who've been in the championship from the start. Well, 77 is going to be coming up over 40 years, 43 years. I think maybe they deserve a little bit of what Ferrari are getting, certainly.
Because they currently get, I think they get a small extra bonus at the moment. But if they sell the team, does that then mean that they are no longer that long-serving constructor? It's an interesting one, because then again, a team or potential buyer might be deterred by the fact that they're then also losing an extra $20 million a year just because they're buying into the team.
Yeah. I mean, well, talking of money, should we look and move forward to the sort of budget caps that are coming in? Because it's quite relevant to the situation of, and the new technical regulations that are going to come in with the new cars, which was going to be in 2021, but for COVID-19, which ruined everything. So now it's going to be 2022. So the new cars with the new aero regulations are 2022, as well as a budget cap of $140 million, which then goes down the year after for the next 3 years to $135 million.
It's an interesting one, because obviously it's meant to benefit the smaller teams, because then there's not such a big disparity between them and the big players like Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull. But then there's also the added factor of what McLaren are doing, because McLaren have been basically sticking to a strict budget, not too dissimilar to that, for the past couple of years.
And they have been on the up.
Yeah, and they've been on the up from it.
Yeah. I'd like to as well point out that I think Formula One management have missed a trick here, because they're not bringing that budget cap in until the year starts. So those teams are putting money into those cars now.
From now, yeah.
From now. And the money is just unlimited spending. So yes, you're introducing a budget cap, but almost a bit too late in my opinion, because they're already going to get a head start, the teams that can spend more money. So
you see, the thing with how this budget cap, I think, will play out is, yes, it will limit some of the development. It won't level the playing field, but because there is such a ladder existing currently in F1 anyway, it just means that ladder won't get bigger. But I don't think that offset will get any smaller.
They've introduced some other rules to try and sort of bring the field closer together.
The wind tunnel hours and stuff like that, and increasing it for teams further on in the championship. Now, that could be a game changer. But again, it is, you know, it's all these new things that have never been done before. And just like with the reverse grid rule, it could either be fantastic or it could be awful.
Yeah. I mean, should we just explain the wind tunnel time come that 2022 season? Teams are going to be allowed an average of 40 runs per week. And then it will go backwards for teams at the front. So teams that finish first will have less wind tunnel runs per week allowed. Teams at the bottom of the championship will be allowed more time in the wind tunnel to try and just bring the field closer together. And whether it works will remain to be seen. It sure sounds like it should work in theory, but
hang on, how about this for a scenario? If, say, I am at the back of the grid and I have I have 10 times more hours than Josh at the front of the grid, I've realized
it's not that big a gap.
I know, but I mean, I'm just hypothetical, right? And I figure out all the problems wrong with my car from those extra hours, which is what it's intended for. But then to make those changes to my car, I didn't have to spend that much more money, which isn't available. You see my predicament.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is a very exaggerated scenario, which probably will never happen. But anything is possible in F1.
That's the nature of the sport, though, isn't it? If you get it really wrong, it's your fault. Or Paddy Lowe's fault.
Paddy Lowe's fault.
Or Paddy Lowe's fault, it. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you guys who you think the biggest winner and loser is of that regulation change.
I think I know. I think the biggest winner will be McLaren. Closely. Actually, I'm not going to say it. I'm going to say that because I think, Dom, you're going to say the other team that I'm thinking of. But yeah, I think McLaren are going to be in the right place come 2022 because they're going to have that Mercedes engine, which has been the best for quite a while. And as you say, Josh, they've been practicing, spending a very limited budget. They're going to have Daniel Ricciardo in the car. They're probably going to have Lando Norris in the car, who will be more experienced by then. I think they're in a really good place. There's a man, Andreas Seidel, that I have a lot of faith in to lead the development of a car.
Dom, what do you think?
I've got some mixed opinions on it. Yes, McLaren will hit the ground running, but I think considering how things have been with the team of yellow, I reckon Renault could make a jump because they were fighting for best of the rest. And then last year, it just all fell apart. But, they do know how to make a good chassis. Yes, the Renault engine hasn't been the best in recent times, but I think they have the potential to come out on top with this whole budget cap. And I think the ones to lose out the most probably will be Ferrari, in my opinion.
That's what I was going to say as well, to lose out. Hate to say it, because I'm a Ferrari man. But
considering how Mercedes has been, I'm not worried about them as a team, honestly. I'm not even worried about Red Bull as a team either. Whatever happens, both of those teams will always land on their feet. But the way how Ferrari has been recently, especially with the decision-making going on at the helm, I think they could stand to be the ones to have an axe to grind.
I think moving forwards, Ferrari really got to start allowing themselves to catch up and not being so... I know that Italy is a very patriotic country, but Ferrari have to start getting talent from other places other than Italy, because the best engineers in the world, although some of them come from Italy, not all of them do. So that's a massive generalization for me to say that, because James Allison was there. They've had some great engineers there that aren't Italian, but they do like to employ Italian people, and I think they need to sort of broaden their horizons a little bit and start poaching some of the best talent.
Chris, who are your biggest winners and losers?
I think I'd agree Ferrari will be the biggest losers. I remember seeing an article about the time when this was all being brought up for the first time, the budget caps, and Ferrari were opposed for it for the longest time. Because I think they knew that they would suffer. They don't have the practicality and leadership to make a change that big, because they're Ferrari are old school. They're an old brand with a lot of old faces in. So I don't think they could be prepared for a change that big. Winner? I don't know, really. I did say McLaren earlier. I think they're going to land on their feet. The best it's out of all the... of them. Personally, yeah, I think McLaren.
There's always the pink Mercedes as well. Sorry to jump in, but I did want to mention the...
Well, they have loads of money, but what's that going to mean? That won't really mean much.
What's that going to mean if you can't spend it?
But if you think back to... It's the same people at that Force India team that have been... Sorry, at the Racing Point team.
It's the second time tonight you've done that.
Ah, but the other one, I didn't record the other
That's
one.
I'm going to bin you at turn one next time we're racing.
Next time we're racing. You'll have forgotten by then.
Oh, he won't, trust me.
So... Like I'd be in front of you at turn one. Yeah,
hey, there you go.
Savaged. Where was I? Yes. Racing Point, the last few seasons, they had that little blip where they run out of money. But before that, they really were performing very well for the limited resources they had. They were best of the rest for, was it two seasons? I think they thrive under tight budgets. So, they might be able to really make a challenge at the front.
I definitely think it's definitely an interesting one. I think biggest winner, I would have to agree, I think McLaren. I think they are pretty much in the sweet spot for all the changes that are happening. They have been operating on a similar sort of budget. So I'd expect them to not make as many sacrifices as some of the bigger teams, and they're already pretty competitive. But I think the biggest loser is actually going to be Racing Point, because a lot of the changes that are coming into play, budget cap I don't think will be that much of an issue, as we've already touched on, but the wind tunnel restrictions I think is going to severely impact them, because the development they're going to be doing next year in 2021 for the next year, 2022, is dependent on how well they do this year. And they've basically copied the Mercedes, which is a very competitive car, i.e. they're going to have less time in the wind tunnel for the new car that's going to be developed for 2022. So they could be very competitive this year and next, but at the disadvantage of not being able to develop as much in the wind tunnel for these aero regs coming into 2022.
So they've effectively shot themselves in the foot.
Is what I'm saying, yes, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I didn't consider it that way. I like that.
I think that's a good point to end on. Thank you for listening to this Track Limits podcast. If you enjoyed it, please leave a like. It really helps us out. And if you're new, consider subscribing to keep up to date with all things motorsport. Now racing is going back, though. We're going to have a lot more episodes coming out, so stay tuned. And if you need another fix, why not check out more of our podcasts linked below.